I'm Jaden.
I'm Manny.
All right, we're going to jump right into it here with some comic news.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
So Valiant Comics had their Valiant Summit, second annual, I guess. Last year, they held it at Twitter headquarters in San Francisco. But this year, they held it in their hometown, Valiant's hometown of New York City, at some historic theater there. And they announced 7 brand new titles coming out later this year. Not all at the same time, but gradually as the year progresses. I think the last one comes out in December. So either one of you guys, I know you both were at work, so I got to see it because I didn't work today, but did either one of you guys check out the list of titles?
No, I didn't have a chance.
Yeah, I had it streaming while I was at work, so.
Oh, right on.
There was some trouble in between there with their Periscope, I think, and some of us got cut off.
Yeah, I was watching it on Twitch TV, and it kept cutting out, and I switched over to Periscope.
Yeah, but I got a good amount of it.
Yeah, I'll go down the list real fast. The first book they announced was Faith, number one. I mean, this wasn't a huge surprise. The Faith miniseries, written by Jody Houser, has been very well received. The second book's probably the one that they announced, probably the one that has me most excited. It's a Generation Zero book, written by Fred Van Lente, who's probably my favorite. Well, oh man, it's tough, because Josh Dysart and Robert Venditti are really good too. But anyway, I loved what Fred Van Lente did on Archer and Armstrong. Kind of a fun adventure feel, but good characterization and interaction. So if he brings that same sensibility to Generation Zero, that'll be awesome. And the art's going to be by Francis Portella. So that's the one that had me the most excited. Also, Britannia, number one. It's a 4-issue miniseries by Peter Milligan and Juan Jose Rip, who we all know from Clone. And that's basically the story of like a Roman centurion, I think is how they described him. And he becomes basically kind of like the world's first detective, first psychologist, when he's trying to fight these monsters and understand why people do the things they do and stuff like that. So kind of right in Peter Milligan's wheelhouse. So that sounds interesting, I guess. Probably not necessarily my cup of tea, but I'll probably check it out because, you know, it's Valiant, so it's good. Bloodshot USA, which sounds very interesting. Also a 4-issue miniseries written by Jeff Lemire, who writes Bloodshot Reborn, and the art's going to be by Doug Braithwaite, whose art is spectacular. And this is basically nanites released in New York City and a lot of New York citizens being turned into bloodshots. And the bloodshot we know has to go in and take care of business. So that one I'm looking forward to as well. And then we're going to see the return of the Harbinger Renegades, written by Rafer Roberts with art by Derek Robertson. Robertson is probably best known for his lengthy run on The Boys. Great, great artist. He hasn't really been the regular penciler on a book since The Boys ended a few years ago. So very much looking forward to the return of the Renegades and Derek Robertson. I don't necessarily care that much for Rafer Roberts as an artist, but I think he's a pretty good writer. I haven't read that much stuff by him. I know you've been reading A&A, right, Manny?
Yes.
And as far as the writing goes, you think it's pretty good?
So far, so good.
So that'll be interesting to see. And just based on some of the things they said, you know, because they released a couple of interviews after the stream was over, with specifically one on CBR where Rafer talked about kind of where the Renegades are since the end of the Josh Dysart Harbinger series and where he's going to pick it up from there. So seems like it should be pretty good. I'm definitely looking forward to what Peter Stanchek's been up to. I feel he's been underused the last year or so in the Harbinger universe. The next title is Savage Number One, written by B. Clay Moore with art by Clayton Henry and Louis LaRosa. This one sounds pretty good too. It's a 4-issue limited series, and it almost seems like their version of Turok. It's like a 15-year-old kid who's grown up on an island with dinosaurs. And there's some more details they gave in the stream, but if you want to learn more, you can go check it out. But it seems like it should be pretty good. And then finally, the last of the Divinity trilogy by Matt Kent and Trevor Harrisine. This one's Divinity 3, the Stalinverse. So basically, we've come to learn that there were three... what are they called? They're not astronauts. Cosmonauts that got sent out on that mission that we learned about in the first Divinity series. And now all three have come back. And so the tagline of this one, Earth has a new god. The world you know is gone. Welcome to Stalin vs. Comrade. It's prestige format, limited series, 4 issues. And it's, I guess the third cosmonaut is going to return to Earth because Divinity 2 is out right now. It's being released as we record this. And that's like the second cosmonaut returning and the implications there. And so this one is the third cosmonaut returning. He's basically going to remake the Valiant universe as he sees fit. So we're going to see... Soviet Cold War era versions of like all the Valiant heroes. This new god is going to remake the entire Valiant universe as, like I said, as he would have done it. So in some of the promo art I've seen, there's a Russian or Soviet version of Bloodshot. There's a Soviet version of Exo Manowar. There's a Soviet version of Shadow Man. So seems like it could be pretty good. There were a lot of people watching the stream when I was watching it. So, yeah, a lot of people excited. Valiant continues to put out high quality stuff. So, and like as I said, it's not like they're flooding the market with 7 new books coming out all at once. These are going to roll out slowly over time, and I'm sure some of their current books are going to end before some of these start. So, next bit of news: Marvel August solicits came out yesterday, and there was a lot of details revealed as far as Civil War II. So if you're a big Marvel person or you want to know like some of the stuff that's going on, just check out the link in the show notes, and you can go and kind of see what's going on. Some of the things that stood out to me: we know Darth Vader is ending with 25, not because it was canceled, because obviously it's one of their best-selling titles, but just because the writer, Kieran Gillen, had kind of a story in mind, and he's reached the end of that story, so he doesn't really see any reason to, like, keep going or pad it out and lessen the impact or water the story down so it could keep going. So that's nice that Marvel, for once, is not doing the money grab thing. Also, Power Pack... classic book from the 80s returns in Civil War II, Choosing Sides number 4, which is also going to feature J. Jonah Jameson, Colleen Wing, and Nick Fury. I'm not sure which version of Nick Fury that's going to be. And then we have a Cable versus Steve Rogers fight in Uncanny Avengers 13. Chris Sprouse is joining Black Panther as the artist for the series' second arc. We know Namor got killed off in Squadron Supreme when Secret Wars ended and we have the all-new, all-different Marvel. But apparently, maybe he's not as dead as some would have thought, which, you know, typical Marvel. So the character Warrior Woman is starting to look for a way to resurrect the leader of Atlantis in Squadron Supreme number 10. Let's see, what else stood out against to me? I guess that's about it. The Dead No More tales, which there were some hints about what's going on with the Spider-Man Dead No More in the Free Comic Book Day. It's basically the return of Jackal, you know, who was behind the whole infamous Spider-Man clone saga. So, and there's also a picture of Gwen Stacy there. So who knows if it's a clone or the original or whatever. But apparently Web Warriors number 10 is going to give a few more details about Dead No More. So... those are just a few of the items that you can learn if you check out all the Marvel solicit info. Some other news that came out today. This was kind of big and in a way not so big, because really, at the end of the day, it doesn't affect the stories or the artwork or anything like that. But DC has a new logo that they released. And some people, as happens every time one of these comic companies changes their logo, there's a pretty strong reaction. So... did you see the new logo, Jaden?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you think?
I like it better than the last one that they had. The current one? Didn't they have a new one for DCU?
No, I don't think so.
Let me see.
They had a little bit of a trade dress for DCU, but it wasn't a logo. So
I don't mind it that much. I mean, it looks fine to me. I don't really care about it that much. I think it's pretty standard. It reminds me of older logos.
I didn't like the current logo, the peel back, whatever.
Yeah.
Never liked that one. It wasn't obvious. It wasn't obvious enough that it was a D and a C. You know, a D being peeled back to reveal a C. It just obviously the old bullet, which they had for 20 years or so, first appeared in 76, was kind of the most iconic, the one most people know. But then when they updated that in 2005 with the swirl logo, and I've heard a few people say that they didn't like that logo. But for the most part, I think a lot of people really, really loved it, but it went away really fast. And it was basically because there was another company that said it was too similar to theirs that also had the DC initials or whatever, and so DC abandoned it, which is kind of a shame because I really, really like that one. That being said, I like the new one better than the peel back logo, the one that came out with the new 52. But I feel like I understand a logo should be simplistic, but I think this one goes a little too simplistic. I wouldn't have minded seeing a little more. I don't know. Like somebody said here, I fixed the DC logo and they tilted it kind of like the old classic bullet was kind of tilted at an angle, and they added a couple stars, like one star at the top middle and one star at the top bottom. And I thought that made it look better. But that being said, you know, I'm kind of like you, Jaden. I don't mind it. I like some of the things they're going to be able to do with it that they weren't able to do with the previous one. I mean, kind of like one of the only things that was cool about the peelback logo that they're able to do is when you peel it back, you would see the C, but then behind it, you would see like comic panels, comic pages. Yeah. And whenever they animated that, like either in an app, you know, some kind of an app or on the computer, or you know, as animate, you know, an animated movie or whatever, they could show those panels moving or make it look like the pages are being flipped, you know. And so that was cool that they could do that. That's something they're not necessarily going to be able to do with the new one. But one thing I love about the new one, what they're going to be able to do is you can have it be transparent.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not going to, like when you see it on the corner of a cover or whatever, you could technically be able to see through it, you know, and there's no background to it. And so it's less intrusive, but it's still there. And so I like that. I like that about it a lot. I know you didn't care for it, right, Manny?
No, not at all. I immediately wanted to edit it. And then I was showing it to the other guys in the office, and they kind of felt the same way, that it looked incomplete. I think I saw that same edit you saw where it's tilted and they added a couple of stars.
It was on Bleeding, Bleeding Cool.
I thought that was, that worked a lot better. And to be honest with you, their current logo right now, I really like it. Not as much as I agree with you that I like the other one with the swooshes.
Yeah.
That one, I think, besides their first classic, some of their classic ones, it's probably the best one that unfortunately couldn't keep. But given the choice between the new one they're going to use and the one they've been using, I would have preferred they stuck with the same one. But I mean, if you're going to have a rebirth, then you might as well change the logo.
Yeah. I mean,
I think they should have paid more homage to the bullet one and been a little bit similar, but just had a little twist on it.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, go to Bleeding Cool, Jaden, and it's their top article, the one with the stars. Because again, it does having the stars on there does pay some homage to, you know, to the old bullet logo that most people know as DC, because you know that one had four stars on it, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it works very well with that blue, though. I
Yeah, it might be come off better.
I think if you're going to redo it, it'd have to be different, like, completely. I think that the reason that it has, like, this type of text and the text is that big with that skinny of a thing is because of how it's just how it is. Yeah. It looks a lot like the 1972 to 1974 one.
Yeah. I mean, it's very simplistic, so.
But yeah. I agree with you that it's not intrusive on covers. Like, I feel like the DC Comics, the old one, the 2012 to 2016 one, is just like, no matter what, you're just going to have this little box on your cover that's just going to be covered.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one final bit of DC Comics news. New Suicide Squad, in the DC solicits that recently came out, we saw that there's going to be a New Suicide Squad one-shot and a New Suicide Squad miniseries coming in August. The one-shot is going to be titled, like, Suicide Squad War Crimes or something like that. It's going to be written by the creator of the current version of Suicide Squad, John Ostrander. He's the one that wrote the series that spun out of Legends, the miniseries that came out in 1987, I believe, from DC. And then the miniseries is going to be kind of focusing on some of the Suicide Squad members that we see in the movie. So, I mean, no surprise, these are solicits for August, and that's when the DC is releasing, or Warner Brothers, rather, is releasing the Suicide Squad movie. So, as I said, no big surprise there. And then the final bit of comic news, we're going to talk about sad news, really, and that's the passing of Darwin Cook on Saturday morning. The news came out. It kind of wasn't widely known, probably just known among his family and close friends, was that Darwin had been battling a very aggressive form of cancer. His wife, Marcia, posted on Darwin's blog on Friday that he was entering palliative care for an aggressive form of cancer. So I think at that point, they kind of knew that the treatments that Darwin had been undergoing weren't really going to be successful. Because for those of you that aren't familiar, palliative care is more about not necessarily treating the actual disease itself, but more the symptoms and just trying to make the patient comfortable. That's not always necessarily the case. Sometimes it's making the patient comfortable as you're still treating the disease. But clearly in this case, that wasn't how things were going down, because just the very next morning, it was announced that Darwin had passed away. And, you know, the announcement on Friday, it had a lot of people really expressing their love, not just for Darwin's work, but for the man himself. And recalling better times at conventions and such, and times meeting and talking with Darwin. And as you could definitely tell that he was very beloved in the industry. And then upon the news of his passing on Saturday, the outpouring of grief and compassion and respect and admiration for Darwin and his work was just overwhelming. It was very nice to see, you know, for all these legends and characters that are on the pages of the comics that are known, you know, around the world, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, Captain America. I mean, these are icons, these are legends. And you know, you'd have to travel pretty far to pretty remote places to find people that don't know these icons. And for all that being said, the actual comic creator community is relatively small. You know, the writers and the artists that work on these legendary icons, it's a close-knit community. And so, when a beloved member passes on, it definitely is felt throughout the industry. So if you've never read DC New Frontier, which is probably Darwin's most iconic work, I highly recommend that, as well as any of his Parker books from IDW. Recently they had a Darwin Cook variant cover month, for DC. I kind of wish I'd bought the bundle from DCBS and gotten them all. I kind of cherry picked which ones that really stood out to me. I'm sure upon his passing, they're going to be a lot harder to find now. If you have, I'm just going to say this: if you have a favorite artist or someone whose work, or even a writer, someone whose work you really enjoy, make sure you reach out to that person and let them know how much you care about their work. Because you never know when they could be gone. You know, that's just life, and it's sad. But it's just, you know, reality. So, Yeah, I was very, very sad to hear about Darwin's passing. I got a chance to meet him in San Diego 2012, I believe. And he was a really super nice guy. Someone that I looked forward to running into again. Unfortunately, he didn't attend any more San Diego's that I know of. At least I didn't go to any panels I went to, or I didn't see his name. He wasn't listed as a guest anywhere, so if he was attending, it was kind of on the sly. He was at WonderCon last year, 2015, but unfortunately that was the convention where I was only there for part of an afternoon because I was in the midst of getting everything set up to move to Phoenix. And it's really disappointing, too, because when I saw him in 2012, Harley Quinn Zero hadn't yet come out. And he has a page in that book, and I wanted to have that book signed by all the artists who did a page in that book, and now that's not going to be possible. It's a really sad day that Darwin Cook is no longer with us. Relatively young, only 53. I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts, Jaden?
I heard about this, like, when it happened the day of. It wasn't a name in comics that I was really expecting, because I knew that he wasn't that old. Like 53 these days is actually fairly young. And I've just heard a lot of people who I listen to their podcasts and stuff. It's just, he's definitely affected a lot of people, and it's a very influential person in the comic world. So definitely going to be a guy that's going to miss. He's a great talent.
Manny? Thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not very familiar with his work, but I could definitely tell going through my social media accounts how beloved he was, and got to kind of know a little bit more who he was. It's unfortunately that this is the way I got to know his work a little bit more. So yeah, you're right. You know, we sometimes take for granted the people behind all the work that they do, because I mean, you enjoy their work for so long, and then, you know, once they're gone, they're gone. They have a certain niche. They have their own style that you're not going to get anymore. You'll get somebody who'll be close to looking like his artwork, but it's not going to be his in particular.
Yeah. Have either one of you guys seen they made the New Frontier into a DC animated movie. Have either one of you guys seen that?
I might have. I don't remember, though.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the better ones, I feel like, so. And also, anybody who's seen The Dark Knight Returns the version of Catwoman that's in that movie with the goggles on, you know, that she wears up on her head for part of the time. I mean, the reason that version of Catwoman exists is because of Darwin Cook. That's his character design. So, very, very, very sad.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Now for some TV news. So Supergirl got renewed for a second season, but it's moving to the CW.
Makes a lot of sense. I was listening to some reasoning about this. And moving to Vancouver, along with the rest of the CW shows, apparently they get a tax break if they shoot in Vancouver from Canada. And the fact that they were spending the CBS, was that where it was before?
Yes.
They were spending about $3 million an episode on it, and they were only getting about 7 million viewers, so it wasn't really getting exactly how much they wanted it to get for how much they were spending. And because it was on CBS, they had to pay all the actors and everybody more. So on CW, I feel like they have to go through less hoops, and it just makes more sense. Like CBS, it's the shows get canceled all the time. So moving to CW, you have a lot more of a chance, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing. Like CBS is the number one network, right? So you have to shows have to kind of pull their weight.
Yeah,
you know, more so than on a smaller network. Yeah, so there's a link in the show notes that talks about four questions that need to be answered. And yeah, like you mentioned, you know, they had to pay their cast a lot more just because it's CBS, you know, and it's a big network. And so it'll be interesting to see if the same cast stays on, if we do see more crossovers with the other CBS CW shows, rather.
I'm sure that's what this means. I mean, if it's on the same network and they're in Vancouver, there's really no reason not to. Yeah.
And then also, as far as what will be the same, what won't be the same, will we still see the same level of special effects and stuff like that? So, be interesting. What are your thoughts, Manny?
Well, it's the smart move, especially after they got such a great response from the Flash's appearance on the show. And then I know they wanted to do more crossovers, but going from CBS to CW, and like Jaden says, there are a lot more hoops to go through. And just having it all on one network, it allows you to have a multi-show event where you can start on whatever. They have it on a Monday, start with the Supergirl, then go to Flash, then go to Arrow, and have bigger events, and it'll be a lot easier. So it's good for them, and if they're going to save money, that works. And I mean, it's that or the alternative to just cancel it altogether. But I guess they see some potential in it.
Yeah. Next bit of TV news: Kevin Smith's bringing Buckaroo Banzai to TV. This is kind of the cult classic movie from the 80s starring Peter Weller as Buckaroo Banzai. If you don't know who Buckaroo Banzai is, there's no way I can explain it to you quickly in this podcast. Go and Google it, read it for yourself, or better yet, go watch the movie. The movie did end with kind of a teaser, like Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League, like, up next or whatever. You know, that was supposed to be the sequel, and the movie wasn't a big enough box office hit to warrant a sequel. So apparently what Kevin Smith plans is to do the first season of the show as kind of a recap of what happened in the movie, and then the second season would be that long anticipated, long awaited, never before seen Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League. So we'll see if it gets picked up. It's pretty interesting. I'm sure there's a lot of fans of the movie out there who are excited about this news. Have either one of you guys ever seen Buckaroo Banzai?
Nope. No idea who that even is.
All right, fair enough. Next bit of TV news: AMC has ordered a comic book documentary from The Walking Dead producers. So this is Robert Kirkman and his Skybound Productions company. Supposed to be a docu-series, they're calling it. Getting in-depth, kind of behind the scenes, not necessarily the general knowledge stuff that we've seen. You know, oh, here's how Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster grew up and how they created Superman, whatever. It's supposed to be a 6-part miniseries with more, as I said, kind of the behind the scenes stuff. So, I mean, these guys are pretty good producers that put on The Walking Dead, so hopefully this will be an entertaining series. Speaking of shows that have been canceled, ABC canceled Agent Carter. This is the show that would fill in for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They would air it in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s time slot whenever Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. went on a hiatus, starring, is her name, Hayley Atwell?
Yep.
From the Captain America, the First Avenger movie. So apparently the ratings just weren't high enough on the second season for them to renew it for a third season, even though the second season ended on a cliffhanger. Well, there's been a huge outcry from fans of the series. They started a one of those online petition things, change.org or whatever it is, yep, to try to get enough signatures to have the series move to Netflix. What I find interesting, so when I read the article, at that time that the article was written, there was 57,000 signatures toward their goal of 75,000 signatures to get it moved onto Netflix. And it's funny because the article makes it sound like if they reach the 75,000 signatures, then yeah, they'll move it to Netflix. It doesn't work that way.
She's already on a new show.
Yeah, she's on a new show, Conviction. But if it's done in the same Netflix style, you know, they film those, you know, in just a few, like, filming only takes a few weeks, maybe a month. So it's possible they could.
I don't think Netflix wants it. It wasn't getting that good of reviews. I mean, people liked it, but not very many people were watching it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, even if it gets the 75,000 signatures it needs, or that whoever set up the change.org petition, you know, they just pulled 75,000. Like, when you set it up, you just pick a number, you know? It's not like, oh, you know, Marvel is saying, or whoever is saying, yeah, if you get this many, then we'll put it on on Netflix. You know what I mean? And so it's like, yeah, they're 57,000 towards their goal of 75,000. Well, 75,000 doesn't mean anything. If you have 75,000 people watching a TV show, guess what? The TV show is going to get canceled. That's not enough viewership to warrant, you know, staying on the air. So
it's enough viewership for a one person YouTube channel.
Yeah, you could definitely make money. So there you go, Hayley Atwell. She does, even though the article does mention that she has another show, which, as I mentioned, is Conviction. It's going to be on ABC as well, I think. But that she's beloved. She loved playing this character. This character is very beloved to her. So if it does get picked up by Netflix, the speculation is that she would, even though she has another show, that she would try to accommodate them with her schedule and find a way to keep filming. So I think, honestly, we've seen the last of Agent Carter.
I think so.
I mean, maybe they'll, you know, have flashbacks or whatever. I mean, the thing is, like, when we saw her in Captain America Winter Soldier, we kind of know that she had a long, and I guess this has been mentioned in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. She had a long career as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and a lot of adventures. And so I think fans of the character, you know, they just wanted it to keep going because they wanted more of the gaps filled in between when we last saw her in Captain America or even in her own show and when we see her in present day in Captain America Winter Soldier. So, but, you know, maybe, I don't know, Marvel could put out a comic, they could do a web comic, who knows? Just because her show's canceled doesn't mean we've seen the last of her. In other news, CW has ordered the Riverdale series based on what they saw in the pilot. So Riverdale, for those of you who don't know, is the hometown of Archie Andrews from the Archie comics. So there's been a lot of news over the past couple months about casting and such. They filmed the pilot. The powers that be at CW saw it and think it's good enough to be on the air. So look for that maybe as a mid-season replacement next year. Also, obtaining a series order is Powerless. This is a DC, set in the DC universe, superhero comedy, and it's basically about an insurance company that insures businesses and what have you against damage done by superheroes and supervillains and superhero-powered fights. It's got Alan Tudyk in it, so right there I hear that name, I'm in. Guy's hilarious and should be pretty good. Don't expect too many superheroes or you know, crazy CGI special effects. It's more about, you know, the people that work in this insurance office that have to deal with the crazy ramifications of living in a world with superheroes. So sounds like it should be pretty good. Did Arrow have its season finale yet?
No, not yet. There's two episodes left? Tomorrow and one more?
Yeah, I think so, two episodes.
How's the season been? I know you guys both thought the first half of the season was kind of disappointing, being that it was kind of used as a setup for Legends of Tomorrow. Now that Legends of Tomorrow is kind of off on its own, has Arrow been improving, or is it, you still feel like the season's subpar?
I think it's been improving, but I don't know. It's still my least favorite season by far, still.
I agree with that. Still not.
I'm still watching.
No, yeah, same here. But yeah, something about Damien Dark just kind of shrug my shoulders and walk away.
Is that what you think, Jaden? The season's been subpar because they just don't have a very good villain this year.
Well, I mean, they pretty much went as big as they possibly could last season with Ra's al Ghul. I don't know who else you get bigger than that. Like Damien Dark isn't even really. Like, I don't feel like he's any better. I feel like just magic versus Green Arrow just doesn't work because he just isn't magic. And the way that they treat it is, like, basically, if somebody with a bow and arrow is trying to fight somebody with the Force, like, obviously, that with the Force isn't even going to get close to dying because he's just going to stop every arrow. I just feel like it doesn't make a very good... Because it used to just be fight scenes. Like, they would just get hand-to-hand or, like, in the first season, it was the archers shooting at each, like fighting, it was the Black Archer or whatever, but now I just feel like it's just not fair.
Fair enough.
Not really a chance for him to even beat Damien Dark.
So we've talked about how Arrow is kind of the DC TV universe version of Batman. It's more of a street level character, down to earth, you know, gritty, yeah, you start throwing some fantastical stuff like magic in there, it's kind of like, it doesn't really mesh very well together.
Yeah, I mean, even with Ra's al Ghul, you had really good hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
And he wasn't, you knew that he had mystical abilities through the Lazarus Pit and whatnot, and just through being alive for so long, but he didn't need the magic. I mean, with Damien Darhk, as soon as he took away his magic, he's pretty worthless. Yep. No offense.
He just looks at his hands.
Yeah, and then he was taken to jail.
What about Flash?
Flash is really good. I haven't watched tonight's episode yet, but it's been really, really good this season.
I watched tonight's episode, and let's just leave it there.
Holy crap, right, Manny?
Yeah, I was, it was funny. My wife had a couple of her friends over, and I'm just in the middle of the living room, just like holding my face going, what the hell? And, yeah, so they're looking at me like I was crazy.
Yeah, I wish you'd seen it, Jaden, so you guys could talk about it. Anyway, you'll have to, maybe we'll talk about it next time.
Sure. Hardworking man needs to catch up on his shows.
No. What about Walking Dead? How's that been?
Well, Walking Dead is done for now.
That's right.
Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I've only seen the first episode, I think, of the season so far.
That's right, because we talked about the cliffhanger. How Manny hated it.
Yeah, I've given up on Fear the Walking Dead since the first few episodes that they aired. I just didn't feel invested in it, kind of like I did with some of the characters from the. You know, we've talked about it before. You know, you kind of know some of the characters from the comics, so you kind of feel a little bit more invested into the story. But with these characters, it's just really hard to get into, especially because it's a spinoff of the regular Walking Dead. So, I haven't watched any of it.
All right. This doesn't have to end in a fight, Tony. Now for movie news, what did you guys think when you heard that Margot Robbie is working on a Harley Quinn solo film?
I thought this sounds like DC announcing something before they even know a movie's going to be successful.
Well, from everything that people have said about her portrayal, it's spot on. Now, according to everything I learned today when I researched this, this was not DC's idea. So basically what happened was, Margot Robbie got the gig as Harley Quinn. And then she said, okay, I'm going to be playing Harley Quinn in a movie. I'm going to research Harley Quinn. And she went and read, much like I did when I did the Harley Quinn spotlight on our YouTube channel, and read all the Harley Quinn appearances and just fell in love not only with Harley Quinn, but all the female characters that kind of inhabit her universe. So, you know, Poison Ivy, a lot of the Batgirl, Birds of Prey, you know, female characters in that kind of vein of the DC universe. And so this isn't just a Harley Quinn solo movie. It's going to be Harley Quinn, and I'm sure Poison Ivy will be in it, probably Catwoman. So she's, as I said, Margot Robbie is producing it. She's co-writing it. They haven't said who the other writer is yet, but definitely wants it to be a female-centric ensemble DC film. So based on the success of the DC superhero girls, we know there's an appetite out there for female DC characters. So I feel like this could be a win for DC, especially if Suicide Squad is received well. Now, of course, it's not exactly aimed at the same audience as DC Superhero Girls, obviously, but I feel like if Suicide Squad does well and they can capture that same kind of feel with a female-centric movie, it could be a big leap and a big leap forward, a big win for DC. What are your thoughts, Manny?
You got to get executive producer Jimmy and Amanda on there.
Well, they can. You know, there's supposedly. Let me see exactly what the article says, because I remember reading it talked about her working with a writer, but not necessarily seeing who it was.
Because I mean, if you put some of the storylines that that they've ran in Harley Quinn, that could be really, really good. I love her personality in the comic book, and her interaction with others is really one of the main things I like too. So especially with Poison Ivy, sounds really cool. I mean, sure, it's early to be that excited that the character's going to work out that well, but I mean, come on. The Hot Topic is selling all kinds of Harley gear already. You know, that's one of the most popular cosplays at every convention. And it's one of the highlights that everybody brings up when you talk about the trailer. I mean, Harley Quinn is the Deadpool of DC Comics.
Okay, so it says, Robbie's also reportedly the one who pitched the movie to Warner Brothers. After landing the role in Suicide Squad, it said that she researched Harley Quinn's history, quote-unquote, fell for DC's female characters, and brought on a female writer to help develop the ensemble film. She presented it to Warners, who have, quote-unquote, snapped it up, according to The Hollywood Reporter. The writer attached has not been revealed, although she's said to be working on a draft. Could that writer be Amanda? I kind of doubt it now that I read it again, just because it says a female writer. It would have, I mean, because Jimmy and Amanda tend to write together. But I don't know. It could be just Amanda. Or it could be that it's just, you know, Jimmy's still going to help out, but, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe Margot and Amanda hit it off. That would just be really cool. If you know, I really do hope that if this becomes a thing that, like you said, Jimmy and Amanda are involved, because clearly they've captured something special with the Harley Quinn. I mean, it's one of their best-selling books, man. I mean, other than Batman, Batman's like their number one selling book, and Harley Quinn is, and like Harley, like if you go and look at the sales numbers for April, their best-selling book is which was third on the top 100, is the Dark Knight Master Race, whatever the current issue. Next is Batman, whatever the, you know, that month's issue of Batman. Their third best-selling title is Harley Quinn, and right below Harley Quinn was Harley Quinn and the Gang of Harleys, the miniseries that's been coming out. So, you know, it's not just Harley Quinn. It's Harley Quinn and whatever, any other Harley Quinn, you know, related books are sold very well, too, because the Harley Quinn, the Suicide Squad April Fool's Day special was, I think, might have been their, like, next one down below Gang of Harley. So, as I said, Jimmy and Amanda, they really captured something special with Harley Quinn when they kind of took her away from the Joker, didn't have her leaning on her relationship with the Joker, made her her own person. And it's not my favorite book. It's not a book I'm even caught up on right now. It's not a book that gravitates to the top of my pile. You know, I've said many times I'm not a big fan of, like, humor comics. But I mean, I don't feel like I'm necessarily the audience. That being said, it is good and it is fun. And I enjoy it when I read it. It's just, I don't know that I'm necessarily the audience, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. Cause it is bringing in a lot of, young readers, female readers, and I'm totally fine with that. Any title that gets people to read comics, I'm all for it. So, I hope, just like you said, Manny, that, if this goes forward and becomes a thing, that Jimmy and Amanda are involved for sure. Also in some DC movie news, Greg Berlanti, who most people will know the name as a producer of a lot of those CW DC TV shows we're just talking about, he's confirmed that that there is a Booster Gold project in the works at Warner Brothers, and he'd love to direct it himself. So if you want more details, just check out the link in the show notes. I, for one, would love to see a Booster Gold movie. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
They'd have to get the right guy for Booster Gold.
Yeah, that's true. But that's kind of true about any superhero movie. I mean, see Jesse Eisenberg for proof of that.
That's true, but I mean, that's also a movie that had a lot of people in it. Like, Booster Gold movie is going to be just Booster Gold, I feel like.
Yeah. You know, I've gone on record as saying I don't really care much for Jesse Eisenberg as an actor. I did finally see a movie with Jesse Eisenberg in it that where I didn't dislike him. I didn't think
Social Network?
No. I didn't like him in Social Network. like, he's one of those actors that normally when I see him, I go, oh, there's Jesse Eisenberg. And I can't ever, whenever he's on the screen, I just think, oh, there's Jesse Eisenberg again, overacting or underacting or being terrible. And it pulls me out of the story. No, I saw Now You See It.
Now You See Me.
Now You See Me? Oh, yeah, Now You See Me. There you go. Yeah, it had Woody Harrelson and what's her name? The chick from Wedding Crashers.
Isla Fisher?
Yeah. And some guy, Franco. His last name's Franco. Not James Franco.
Dave Franco.
Who?
Dave
Franco. Yeah, Dave Franco, yeah.
The Hulk.
The Hulk?
David Banner.
He plays David Banner?
Yeah.
That's Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's in the movie, too.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Mark Ruffalo is in the movie, too. Yeah. It does have him. I thought you were saying Dave Franco was a Hulk. I'm like, what?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And Morgan Freeman. So, have you guys both seen it?
No.
Yeah, I like that movie. Yeah. It has a sequel coming out soon.
Yeah, that's what prompted me to watch it. I saw a little teaser trailer, and I was like, oh, you know, I always wanted to see that movie, and I never did. And then I was up late on Saturday, couldn't sleep. I was like, oh, let's see what's on. And I came across it. I was like, oh, yeah, let me watch this movie. Maybe I can fall asleep watching it. Then I ended up staying up and watching the whole thing. Yeah, it was really, really good. And first thing I ever seen Jesse Eisenberg in that I didn't hate him, so. That's my plug. That's my ringing endorsement for Now You See Me. Go check it out. You should watch it, Jaden. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Next
up, my TV shows.
Yeah, exactly. Catch up on your TV shows first. Next bit of news. Michael B. Jordan is in talks to join the Black Panther, which, of course, is being directed by Ryan Coogler, who directed Michael B. Jordan in Creed. So.
I'm really looking forward to this. I love Michael B. Jordan, and Creed was amazing.
Michael B. Jordan did a great job. Everything that we saw of the Black Panther in Captain America: Civil War was awesome. So it just seems like this like the planets are aligning in order for this to be just a blockbuster hit. It's going to be interesting though, because apparently he's in talks to play the bad guy. And I've only ever seen Michael B. Jordan as a guy that you kind of want to root for, kind of on the side of angels. So it'll be interesting. You know, there's several classic Black Panther villains they could choose from. Some of them a little more sympathetic than others. I feel like Michael Jordan's a really good actor. So if they choose one of those Black Panther villains that's not kind of the twirling mustache kind of guy, but more of a complicated antagonist, that it'll be interesting to see the way Michael B. Jordan portrays them. So, say for instance, we saw in Captain America: Civil War, following along with the kind of the history of Wakanda in the comics, that the Wakanda nation is kind of isolated. They kind of held themselves separate from the rest of the world. And we see T'Chaka, Black Panther's father, saying that that's not going to be the case anymore. So it could be, and this is purely speculation because we, you know, have no idea what the story's about yet, that T'Challa, the Black Panther, is going to be taking steps to move his country more into the world scene, and Michael B. Jordan may be playing a quote-unquote villain who feels that's not in the best interest of the Wakandan nation and is trying to prevent that from happening. So in that way, it wouldn't be the kind of the mustache twirling kind of villain. It would be more of just somebody with a different point of view. And I think that could work really well. But like I said, that's all speculation at this point. I'm just glad to hear that he's going to be in the movie. And it hasn't been confirmed yet. He's still in talks. You know, so these things take time. Negotiations, salary, all that kind of stuff. So, and whether or not how much input he has on the role, which villain it'll be. You know, there could be a lot of moving parts here, so we'll see. But three of us are definitely excited about it. Did you? Yeah, I don't know that we ever talked about Creed, Manny, with you. Did you really like it?
Yeah, I really liked it. Ryan Coogler, that guy's amazing. He did another movie. I don't know if you guys seen it. It's called Fruitvale Station, also with Michael B. Jordan. where he plays the young man who got shot by a BART police officer. It made the news. It was on camera, and that, I mean, that movie
was that the really... one that happened in Oakland?
Yeah, yeah, Fruitvale Station.
I didn't know they did. I didn't know they made a movie about that incident. That just happened just a couple years ago.
Yeah, Ryan Coogler is the director. Michael B. Jordan plays the young man who got shot. Wow. So having them reunited on Creed was really cool. Obviously, they work well together, and so it just makes sense for him to want to team up with him back on Black Panther, which would be so good.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. And the final bit of movie news, Batman vs. Superman Fallout. So Warner Brothers has installed Geoff Johns and John Byrne to kind of co-run the whole entire DC movie universe. So apparently these are the two guys, and they're going to try to create a cohesive vision, and they're going to be kind of the go-to guys for all the DC movies going forward. Geoff Johns is not leaving his other duties overseeing the TV side of things or the DC Rebirth stuff. And he will answer to Diane Nelson, who is, of course, the president of DC, while John Byrne is going to answer to Silverman, whatever his name is, who's the head of Warner Brothers. So this is basically, as I said, fallout from Batman vs. Superman not being as well received. You know, it's been out for well over a month now, and I think it's like $860 million it's made or whatever, as opposed to Captain America Civil War, which also pits two heroes against each other, but done in a better way, a kind of a brighter way, but yet exploring more complex issues in a way. And it's already surpassed Batman vs. Superman on its way to making $1 billion plus. So I think that people at Warner Brothers were thinking that Batman vs. Superman was going to do better than it did, and it was going to kind of consolidate Zack Snyder as the go-to guy, and he was going to be the one to kind of lead the DC movie universe. Thank God that did not happen. And they're kind of realizing now that Zack Snyder just doesn't get the characters, or at least doesn't get them in a way that resonates with fans of these characters. And so I think that bringing in John Byrne, who's got a long pedigree and track record in the movie industry, with Geoff Johns, who also has knowledge of the movie industry from working with Richard Donner, but yet has clearly got a great understanding of who DC characters are and what makes them beloved by their fans. This could be like the first step into finally getting these DC movies right. And I think we're really going to know if that's the case with Suicide Squad, because Suicide Squad is the first movie that Geoff Johns has had a lot of input on. And based on that input that he had with Suicide Squad is part of the reason that this decision was made. So I think once we see how well Suicide Squad does, we'll have an idea of exactly how positive an impact this can have with Geoff Johns and John Byrne kind of running the show for the DC cinematic. One thing I do worry about, though, is Geoff Johns stretching himself too thin, you know, having a hand in guiding the movie universe while he's still trying to guide the TV universe, which clearly he's done a good job with, and yet stay involved enough in the comics to appease fans, because we've talked about this before. When the New 52 was announced, people were excited. Geoff Johns was supposed to kind of oversee things, but it just got too busy with the TV stuff and kind of took up more of a backseat role. And, you know, we know what happened then. And one of the most exciting things that people felt about the DC Rebirth, and one of the things I heard from a lot of fans, was if Jeff's involved, we trust it. So how do you guys feel about Geoff Johns and John Byrne overseeing the cinematic universe? Think it's a step in the right direction, Jaden?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a step in the right direction. I don't think that he's going to spread himself too thin. I think as long as he's just there and has like veto rights, basically, and can be like, wow, this really isn't going to work like this, and you need to do this and this, and not give like I feel like Zack Snyder just had so much just free reign with Batman v Superman, and that's why it just ended up like the way it was, because he pretty much just did whatever he wanted. Because that's what it sounded like to me, at least. So I think that, like, I think one of the reasons that the Marvel Cinematic Universe does so well is because Kevin Feige, and along with Disney, are all there with veto rights and can go and look and nitpick stuff in movies. And with Jeff Johns and who else? What was the other guy's name?
John Berg.
Yeah, and John Berg overlooking, I think it's a step in the right direction for sure.
Part of the reason that I feel it so positive, it's not like Warner Brothers just said, okay, well, we're going to put these two guys in charge. You know, they looked at what the contributions that Berg and Johns made to the Suicide Squad movie. Even though the movie's clearly David Ayer's movie, you know, with his sensibility, like you said, it's Johns and Berg there to tweak things and make sure that it has the same tone and sensibility, and it works as a DC Comics property. And they saw what they did and they said, oh, we need to have that on the entire DC Cinematic Universe. Let's put these two guys in charge so they can, you know, I mean, it's still, they, and the article from the Hollywood Reporter specifically states that Warner Brothers still wants it to be filmmaker driven, I guess you could say. The movies, they still want each of the filmmakers to use their own sensibility, but they just want a consistent feel. What are your thoughts, Manny?
Yeah, I think it was a great move, because I feel like, yeah, they're going to give the directors free range to do what they want, but at the same time, they're going to have Jeff Johns kind of overwatching and just making sure things don't get too out of control, or maybe kind of sending them in the right direction if they don't understand a character too well, or a concept, or a theme. You know, he'll be there to kind of make sure that, yeah, it's their movie, but how about you just tweak it a little bit here or a little bit there, and then, obviously lead to directors walking out. We've seen it happen with DC and Marvel, but at the end of the day, you get a better movie because you got somebody who's overseeing the project who really cares about the characters for a while.
Well, who understands the characters. I think Zack Snyder's problem is he doesn't understand who Superman is supposed to be.
I don't think he understands who any of the characters. I think he was trying to make another Watchmen movie for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I like his style of movies, but I mean, the teams are assembling now going forward, it just seems like it's going to be such a better cinematic universe if you have an Ben Affleck, who has an Oscar pedigree and very good storytelling skills, working on a Batman film with Jeff Johns. I mean, that sounds golden already. And then you have a director like David Ayer, who's used to shooting those really wild, violent action sequences, but backed up by Jeff Johns. You're getting the right directors for the tone of the movies that you want, but now you have that that, I guess you can call it, safety net, where you make sure that every character stays in their lane instead of you know, getting the Superman that nobody seems to, that Zack Snyder doesn't seem to understand.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. The characters stay in their lane. that's what we need. You know, one bit of comic news that you mentioned before we started recording, Manny, we forgot to talk about. New York Comic Con.
Oh, yes. Cool. Okay. Apparently, I was reading in Newsarama that New York Comic Con is going to have a new way of getting tickets. They're calling it fan verification, where in order for you to purchase a ticket for New York Comic Con, you have to fill out, I'm pulling it up right now, I think it's like a survey, a profile, where you fill it out and they let you know if you qualify to buy a ticket or not. If you qualify, you are then given the time when you can purchase your ticket and only your ticket. So, for example, I'm a big comic book fan. I'll fill this out. I get approved, but I want to take my wife. If she doesn't have a profile and she doesn't pass, she can't get a pass to New York Comic Con. They're not going to be selling VIP tickets anymore, and online is the only place you're going to be able to get them.
Where did you see where it said they were only going to be able to buy your own?
Right there on the Newsarama.
They must have that wrong then, because it says if you're purchasing tickets for you and your friends or family, each person has to have their own verification profile.
Exactly. So
can still buy more than just your own. They're basically doing the same thing that San Diego does. Because I thought the same thing when I first read like the title of the article, like fan verification, like what you have to like prove you're a comic book fan. Are they gonna have like trivia questions or something? And yeah, so I think the fan verification is basically just like the same thing San Diego does with pre-registration. So what it does is it keeps people at the last minute from, you know, ticket scalpers basically at the last minute from going, oh wait, I can make money off these tickets, you know, a couple days before, and they'll go in there and they'll whatever. And it also limits, you know, they can't go and buy, you know, a bunch of tickets just because they happen to get lucky. You know, like each ticket, each badge you buy has to have a name that's associated with a pre-registration profile.
Well, you know, if it's like that, then actually makes sense. But the way some of it was laid out when I was reading it, it seemed like you had to fill out some type of survey or something.
Yeah, but there's a few things on there that I think, like, okay, because usually, like, San Diego lets you know a week ahead of time. This says 48 hours. You give me 48 hours to let you know before the tickets go on sale. And they're only going to be sold online. What, you know? So, just like San Diego, like, you're going to need to know, because you're going to need to be on the computer right when they go on sale, because, you know, New York is becoming as popular as San Diego and selling out really, really fast. And yeah, no more VIP tickets to be able to skip lines. That's big news. And they used to sell some of the tickets at like Midtown Comics in Manhattan. And those aren't going to be available anymore. So yeah, it's a big deal, but it's not. It's not quite the verification that I originally thought when I read it. Yeah, because I thought the same thing. I was like, what? You have to. How are you going to prove? Like, take a picture of your comic collection and send it in, and we'll let you know if we'll allow you to come to our comic book show. That would have been pretty funny if that had been the case, but alas, that's not to be so. I mean, we'll see. I mean, these comic conventions are definitely changing. I mean, comics are in the pop culture now. We've talked about that at length on this show. So they're certainly not going to go back to the days where you can walk up to San Diego on a Saturday and buy a badge and go into the show. But with the movie studios gradually leaving, you know, we've heard announcements for Fox is not going to be there this year. We know that Marvel Studios is not going to be there in Hall H doing a presentation. I don't think Warner Brothers is doing a big presentation in Hall H this year. So anything that allows true comic fans to go rather than so many of the looky-loos, I'm all for. So I guess that's going to do it for this episode. We want to thank everyone for joining us for the latest episode of the Comic Source Podcast, this Comic Talk episode. If you want to follow us on Facebook, do a search for the Comic Source. Give us a like, follow us there. Keep you updated on all the new episodes being released. If you want to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. You can eavesdrop on all our conversations with other comic creators there. Also, you can go to our website for all previous episodes of our podcast. There's a link to Manny's blog there, my blog. You can catch episodes of our YouTube channel. The website address is thecomicsourceblog.com. If you want to contact us directly, thecomicsourceblog podcast@gmail.com is the easiest way to reach us, or of course you can contact us through the contact us link on our page. Also, if you're fans of Latino Review, you may have noticed that Manny's been doing some writing of articles for comic book reviews over there, so be sure and check out his reviews on that website. And once again, we just want to thank everyone for all the support you've been giving us lately. Our numbers are definitely up. We're going to have a lot of creator interviews coming up for you. I'm in the process of trying to get those scheduled now. It's a lot of moving parts, you know. These creators are busy creating the comics and content that we love, so it's not always the easiest thing. But we're hoping to have some really cool guests on for you soon. So make sure you're following us on Twitter or Facebook to find out when those episodes are going to be on and who exactly our guests, very special guests, are going to be. So once again, we want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll talk to you next time.
Later.